You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey everyone, how's it going? It's Anthony Cosenza with the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. Happy to have you with us once again. It's that time of the week where we get together and talk some Bengals football. We sometimes do it more than once a week, depending on what's going on around the league and what's going on with the Cincinnati Bengals. But we still have our weekly show, our 1 hour-ish show. We say 1 hour-ish. We always try and keep it 45 minutes to an hour, but we get jabbering and some listeners call in and we get some good engagement. So we sometimes go over, but it's around an hour. You can plan to be with us about an hour. And by us, aside from myself, of course, I mean my co-host, John Sheeran. John, how are you? You are, we spoke a little bit before we got on the air. You're all grown up. Our little baby's all grown up. He graduated from University of Cincinnati. He's a Bearcat. A Bearcat alumni, officially. How are you, bud?
That doesn't sound right at all. That does not sound right at all. I'm still on campus, so I'm going to pretend I'm a student for as long as I can until some bills come my way. So let's just keep that vibe for a little bit longer.
Yeah, live that life, man. be Mitch from Old School. You know, just hang out on campus till you're 35, 40 years old. Start a frat. That sounds like a fun time to me. But yeah, congratulations on that, man. That's a big accomplishment, obviously. And, you know, hopefully big things are ahead for you. And hopefully it's still in this arena that you've been working in for about a year or two now. So we look forward to seeing what's ahead for you. And congratulations once again on that. Well, there's been, to kind of kick off the show here, there's been some interesting news, even though it's a little bit of a lull. There was the big to-do with the draft and all the analysis, and we kind of picked that apart last week. We talked about each one of the picks. I think overall it seems like a solid draft class for the Cincinnati Bengals, but where the news has kind of peaked a little bit after the draft for the Cincinnati Bengals has been with the wide receivers and with some of their bigger names. AJ Green and John Ross have been in the headlines because of some comments they've made. And then there's some rumors that have been floating around with another wide receiver in the group. And we'll talk about that. Kind of what's interesting about this group, we mentioned it last week, John, is the Bengals haven't really done much this offseason in terms of addressing that group. You know, AJ Green, IR, set to become a free agent. Tyler Boyd, end of the year injured, set to become a free agent. John Ross, injured a little bit last year, showed some signs of growth, and then behind them, you've got a lot of question marks in Josh Malone, Cody Core, etc. Really, the biggest name they brought in was undrafted free agent Stanley Morgan. I guess I'll just start it off before we get to the comments and all the specifics and what we're going to talk about here. But I mean, are you confident in this group? And were you surprised that the Bengals didn't really do all that much to address this group, given those circumstances that I just mentioned?
The only kind of minor surprise would be a lack of a draft pick, considering they have both AJ and Tyler Boyd entering contract years, because the Bengals typically like to get ahead and at least get some potential replacements on books via draft pick. Like we saw that with Trevion Williams, potentially Giovanni Bernard's replacement running back, Michael Jordan, potentially Clint Bowling's replacement at left guard. They don't and it's hard to obviously replace AJ Green and Tyler Boyd for how talented they are, but I think it does speak volumes about their confidence in the group with a lack of any serious investment in that position. And not only the fact of the talent level that's already there, but their confidence level in getting both Green and Boyd on the books going forward. But I have confidence in the three starters that they have. Obviously, AJ Green's AJ Green. I think Boyd's development is going to continue into more positives than what he even showed last year. Hmm. And yeah, I still have faith in John Ross. Maybe not to live up to that hype as a ninth overall pick, but just as a solid complementary option to give the trio just the spark that Green and Boyd can't really provide in terms of deep threat and yards after catch ability. So the confidence is there with me in the top three. The confidence beyond that in the depth is still very shaky, but I think it's just a testament to them willing to tap to spark that potential that hasn't been sparked yet with guys like Josh Malone, with guys like Alex Erickson, and with a guy like Stanley Morgan Jr. And I think there is definite potential there, and adding another body in that group can create some competition, but can also stunt the potential development of a guy like Malone, who I think still has a chance to become something solid as another complementary piece. And Erickson is Erickson. We'll talk a little bit more about him, but I think this group has enough pieces to work and to get the offense back on track. Obviously it's led by very solid veterans, very talented veterans. And I think overall better utilization of the group is what's more important than just injecting more talent in a group that I think has enough talent already.
So you mentioned the idea of, you know, the Bengals probably feel like they are pretty confident in the fact that they'll keep Boyd and or Green, probably both, at least beyond 2019.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, to kind of segue a little bit, start to segue into some of the comments, AJ Green said he wasn't really sure what his future holds. He wants to remain in Cincinnati. That's some of the comments he made. Maybe the plan is franchise tag Green and long-term sign Boyd because of the age and some of the injury stuff with Green. Is that something? Because I'd be hard-pressed to see them giving out two huge deals to two wide receivers, two long-term deals. AJ Green now, I mean, by the time after this season rolls around, you know, he's approaching his, you know, I think he's entering his eighth or ninth season right now. So, mm-hmm. You know, double-digit years in the league. He's not a young pup. I mean, is that the route you maybe foresee them going? Is franchise tag Green, long-term Boyd, maybe vice versa? But I don't know.
Yeah, because they rarely use the franchise tag. And I think it was Michael Johnson was the last time they did back in 2013. And obviously when teams use the franchise tag, it's very rare that a long-term extension is reached after that. I think the plan is for both to get extensions. I don't know, because of Green's recent durability issues, because he's going to be 31, 32 going into 2020, there's a slight devaluation of what he could potentially get on the open market. And that's why if you offer to trade him, teams may not pony up for a first round pick because of those factors in general. I think with Boyd, it's going to be obviously significantly less because he's not a true number one receiver. And I think there's a market for a receiver like him. Guys like Keenan Allen have said it, Paul Richardson on the open market, even Marvin Jones to a sense. There's been a slight inflation for your flanker, your number two receivers, and it's probably going to be around the 11 to 12 million range for him, either late this offseason when they usually do extensions, or if he hits the open market, it may go up to 13 or 14. But it's not going to be, I guess, as much as Green. I think it's still going to be a price that the Bengals would be willing to pay for what Boyd is, because that's a player that they developed the right way under this regime. It has grown a lot of chemistry with Dalton. I think they might have learned their lesson after letting both Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu go. They kind of lucked out with Boyd, and as long as AJ Green is here, he's going to need that extra help. And I think it is a priority to get them both under contract, because I believe that if AJ Green does get franchise tagged, there's a significantly less chance that he comes back for a third contract with the team, because that's another year of him potentially depreciating as a player, as a receiver, as an athlete. And I don't think that's the preferable way for them to go about it.
Yeah, good point about the affordability factor of Green. You know, as I just said, he's entering his ninth season in 2019, so he'll be entering double-digit seasons. You know, so maybe the price tag, while still will be very high, maybe not as high as we think, or maybe even what Green thinks he could get. Obviously, this is a big year for him, but usually the Bengals like to get these deals done the summer before these guys hit free agency. there are a lot of reasons to that. Sometimes they get a little bit better deal from a team perspective because it's not within the free agency frenzy where teams throw a bunch of money out. But, you know, also we have to remember, and I have to remember specifically because I get upset in March and April sometimes, this keeping guys like this and being able to keep both of them is why the Bengals aren't huge players in outside free agency and don't engage in the frenzy. So that's one reason. And then, you know, maybe they've learned a lesson from 2015, 2016, 2017, when they didn't do much. They let guys walk out of the door, valued players. And now they say, you know, we can't do that. We got to hang on to the our best players, no matter the cost. So good point there, John. The big comment, though, from AJ Green that I thought was really telling, and look, when you read these interviews, we've had guys on the show before, too. God bless them. A lot of times it's player speak. A lot of time it's talking up the team and the coaches and all that kind of stuff. And rightfully so. I mean, team player, be a good employee, all that kind of stuff. I thought this was very telling and a very interesting quote by AJ Green. He sat down with Chris Sims of Pro Football Talk recently in a video interview. Quote, playing with Coach Lewis, it's all about the defense. You don't show up the defense, and Coach Lewis, of course, being Marvin Lewis, you don't show up the defense at practice. But Zach Taylor is like, quote, OTA one, we're going to kick the defense's butt. That's what we like to hear. I love the way he teaches. He's not yelling at you. He's teaching every little detail and having you understand why we run it this way. Wow. Wow. You know, we've often lauded Lewis as the quote unquote players coach. We kind of said, hey, the players love him. Hey, and again, this may be a little bit of, hey, honeymoon phase, right? I mean, they're just getting their first taste of Taylor. They had 16 tastes of camp where some of these guys, you know, many, many years of with Lewis. Still, that says a lot to me. I don't know about you. I mean, and in a way, it does make me feel very positive about the direction this team is heading, even with the inexperience on the coaching staff.
Different backgrounds, significantly different ages. I mean, Taylor is essentially a millennial, and us millennials, we like to understand why we're doing something, and I think that kind of translates to what Taylor was saying with that. But obviously, Lewis coming from a defensive background, he has his preference and way of doing things and way of running practice, and practice is always such a huge component for his coaching style and way to motivate players and to prioritize who makes the team is how they practice. And obviously that emphasis on defense and overall effort and all that stuff, that was his way, and it had its benefits but also had its negatives as well. I guess with Taylor and him being high energy offensive guy a la McVay, maybe not to the same degree, it's a breath of fresh air for Green, and you can't honestly have a better mouthpiece for an organization than AJ Green, especially for an organization like the Bengals, who for the most part in public perception aren't viewed as this world-class organization. But Green would have nothing but positive things to say about the Bengals, so when he's saying things like this about his former coach, that's definitely when you have to prick up your ears and just listen to what the man's saying, because you know it's the honest to God truth. So when he's saying this, you know it was definitely real, and it's definitely a real impact being felt now in Paul Brown Stadium. And that it is the off season, and we can't take these things out of proportion, but I think this is something that we can genuinely believe is a good thing and a positive going forward, because more than anything, it's change and it's a deviation from the norm of the last 16 years of solid but not good enough, of just overall underwhelmingness. And if they aren't going to succeed, it's not going to be because they do the same things over. And I think it's the general genesis of what we're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I've said how old I am. I kind of am in between the millennial and the Gen X type of. I'm on the cusp for both. And I, you know, as you read or listen to the possible personality profiles of each one of those generations, I'm like, oh, that's me. Oh, that's not me. Oh, that's me. Like I see both in me, but I do see, and I'm going to try and word this as best I can, because it sounds great in my head, but I don't know if it's going to come out correctly. But, you know, I've also coached sports, and when you and we don't really know that Lewis is quote unquote the yeller. We've seen other coaches that have really been the yeller. They grab the face masks and blah blah blah. We've seen Lewis do that from time to time. We've also seen Lewis the encourager on the sideline, clapping his hands, "Let's go!" Yeah. But we've seen it, you know, in Hard Knocks, you know, be an effing pro in the locker room. We all remember that clip. And we've seen him yell at some guys. Guys have been in his doghouse and have had very, very, you know, a lot of trouble getting out of it. But my thing is, if you're going to yell, you also have to be able to teach. And if, you have to explain why someone is doing something incorrectly. If you're just yelling at them saying, "No, that's not right," and they keep repeating the same mistakes, then obviously that's going to get in your doghouse. They're going to get in your doghouse if you're not explaining correctly or teaching correctly. Now is Taylor, and just by the press conferences and what have you, he is a little bit more of the aw shucks type, it seems, than Lewis. But I agree that the teaching thing is important. And I think that, you know, this, I can't stress this enough about how much I think what you said makes sense, John, about the personality profile of millennials and the younger kids on this team. I don't think millennials and younger people respond to the harsh yelling, and I don't think they respond as well to that as they do teaching and understanding why they're doing something, positive reinforcement, that sort of thing. I think they just respond in a little bit of just studying and working at a university and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm around this stuff and I hear about it, I read about it, I see it. So I think that what you said really resonates and makes sense in terms of teaching as opposed to yelling. And, you know, it almost sounds like, again, Lewis was favoring certain people and certain units over others, and that didn't maybe sit well with some people.
And I think more than anything, like, the reason why, like, the Patriots always have a system that is constantly successful is the constant evolution of it. And it's the constant changing of who's on the roster and what they can do to fit who they have and kind of play to their strengths. So when you use more, and again, I'm 22 years old, I have no coaching experience in my life, but just just knowing how I would respond to some situations, if you explain to somebody why you're doing this and you have that open line of communication with the strengths of your team, then they can start discourse about you and say, "Hey, what if we try to do things differently?" And then there's an evolution of your process, of your system, that overall makes it better because it's the way that the players actually executing the system want it done. And if you can find a middle ground of, okay, I can teach this and hey, I can play this, then you wouldn't have these constant, you know, negatives surrounding your coaching style and have other teams exploited so constantly over the course of 16 years. So maybe, like, we won't see these same tired old narratives about, you know, linebackers who can't cover or tight ends who can't, you know, or a defense who can't cover tight ends over the middle, or an offense that resorts to running the ball when they should pass. So you have this constant evolution of a process because you have better communication and overall better coaching, and that leads to better utilization of talent. And I think that's, like, the main overall thing with this kind of new approach, I think.
So speaking of players that have been in Marvin Lewis's doghouse and play wide receiver, some more interesting comments were made by John Ross in regards to a lot of different things. One of which was, you know, is he surprised about the Bengals not picking a wide receiver with their 10 picks in the draft? He said, quote, "I wasn't surprised. I think it surprised other people more than it surprised us." And this is a video you can watch on Bengals.com, by the way. He kind of said, "I think we've got a lot of good talent, a lot of good guys in our room." He says he wants to compete. I don't want to belabor a lot of time and conversation on Ross, because we did speak about him last week and others. But I think probably one of the other entertaining areas, and this goes to Zach Taylor, the communicator, I guess. Ross said, basically, "I talked to Zach Taylor directly, and Zach told me there's a lot of rumors going around. and he called and cleared it up regarding the trade rumors that were floating around about Ross. So all of that's kind of interesting. I don't know. What do you make of Ross going into the third year in this system? Is he ever going to blend? Is he ever going to look anywhere close to the guy that he did on the college tape, as opposed to, you know, what we've seen these first 2 years in this system?
Like, there's a definite argument that you can make that over the last 2 years, like, Ross would still be a top receiver in both this year's class and the 2018 class, because the talent in college was so damn evident. It was so much more than I think the perception of him was, just an injury prone receiver who could only run straight. And it's only been 2 years removed from that. So the time for a fresh start couldn't have come at a better time for him. The fact that he doesn't have to be like a secondary option in this offense, because they did retain Tyler Eifert. When he's healthy, he's still a dominant force. They have Tyler Boyd now developed into that solid number two. He's in a more, I think, relaxed state of not only having a little bit less pressure on him, but also a brand new, you know, coaching staff that should be determined to put him in the best position possible. And he once again, like, he's healthy for all we know, and hopefully he's going to continue to stay healthy. And I think if they just understand what his strengths are and understand there's more to his strengths than just running in a straight line and stacking cornerbacks on the top, and they can give him the ball in more more of a variety of ways rather than just nine routes, I think there is definite potential for that production to be vastly increased. And just if you just continue on that path and don't deviate from it and just understand who he is as a player, I think there's a chance that we can see not necessarily 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns and, you know, numbers that you would expect from a top 10 pick at the receiver position, but just consistent production from a number three receiver. And we'll just, I guess, evaluate him from there. But we have to get to that point still. But I think that who he is as a person and who this coaching staff is and what this offensive identity is kind of building around, I think it's going to be a good match, because there is obviously the Brandon Cooks equivalent to the Rams. I don't think he's exactly the same player as Brandon Cooks, but you can manufacture production with a guy like Ross. You can't say that about every receiver in the NFL, but his skill set, his athleticism, there's obviously some potential to work with there. And I think that's enough. And it's just a matter of Andy getting in the ball and Taylor understanding how to get in the ball.
Right. And, you know, he's not the same guy as, and stick with me on this a little bit, he's not the same guy as Andrew Hawkins, but I would like to see some plays devised for Absolutely. Him the same way that the Bengals used to use Andrew Hawkins. Now, he's taller than Andrew Hawkins. Andrew Hawkins had a little bit more, tiny bit more stockiness to him, but I mean, they both had comparable speed. Ross a little faster, obviously. They had the shiftiness. They had the yards after catch stuff. You know, I think that some of the – and the Bengals didn't overly use Andrew Hawkins, but they found ways, especially in 2012 and I believe 2013, they found ways to get him the ball and do so creatively. And I think that, you know, that can be something that they can maybe implement partially, as well as some of the things that the Rams do or have done in the offenses that Zach Taylor was a part of. But big year for John Ross. And you know what? Without trading him, without drafting a wide receiver, it's showing a lot of trust in him to have a big role this year in the Bengals offense. Speaking of trust and potentially having a big role in the Bengals offense, let's move on to Alex Erickson on Wednesday. And you wrote this post for CincyJungle.com, John. There was a report, I think it was via Evan Silva of Evan Silva and Michael Lombardi on the GM Shuffle podcast. They are with, is it Roto World? I believe Evan Silva's with. Yeah, so they have a podcast there, and former executive.
Well, the podcast is Roto World. I think Evan Silva's just Roto
it's his World. Own. Yeah. But anyway, he had Michael Lombardi on there. Obviously, Michael Lombardi's been around the league for a very long time. Very well connected guy, and he dropped the bomb that there have been trade rumors or trade requests about Alex Erickson, of all people. and the Bengals have declined those requests. So I guess, John, do you find this as more of an indictment of what they were potentially offered, or do you find this as, you know what, Erickson is going to play a big part in this offense aside from doing his return duties?
It very well could be both. And the way that Lombardi started to answer this question, because they were talking about potential breakout receivers in terms of fantasy, and he literally began like the answering the question about Erickson as saying he's the Cooper Kupp to Andy Dalton, like Cooper Kupp is to Jared Goff. And initially, upon hearing that, like, is Tyler Boyd, does he not exist anymore? Because he's still going to start as a slot receiver. I don't know if it was just a lazy Caucasian comparison there, but honestly, it very well could mean a bigger role for Erickson going forward. And honestly, unless they were offered like a fourth or a fifth round pick, I would have probably hung up the phone too, because I think for what Erickson, what his potential to bring for an offense as like a fourth receiver to be a backup to Tyler Boyd in the slot, but also to do more than that, to potentially be a nice flanker receiver and to have potential on some, you know, mid to underneath routes, and also as one of the league's more consistent and productive kick returners. So there's definitely a spot on this roster for him. There's definitely value for him in the receiving room. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was a more noticeable rotation with Erickson to implement him more into the offense. Maybe that's something that helps out Ross too, because maybe Erickson and Ross have this rotation going. You have sometimes Boyd playing on outside, we have Erickson on inside, maybe Erickson inside, Ross on the outside. Maybe you give AJ Green a couple more breathers. There's definite potential to use Erickson. And again, he's not a world beater at the position. There's something special about him athletically, like a guy like Hawkinson or Andrew Hawkins and John Ross. And there's nothing like physically, he's only like 6'2", but solid hands, solid route running, solid yard after the catch ability. There's definite potential for production with him. At the very least, the front office values him because they did sign him to a 2-year extension. So he's here for the next 2 years. And I think there's a good chance that he gets involved more. And I don't know if Lombardi was implying that he knew that, or that was just his personal opinion of him, but I think it's worth at least pondering about.
Quite a bit of faith in a guy that has 38 receptions in his 3-year career, 418 yards and just one receiving touchdown. I'll say this, the reception to target ratio is pretty high. 8 target in 2016, 8 targets, 6 catches. 2017, 16 targets, 12 catches. Last year, 29 targets, 20 catches. Not overly crazy, but it shows even in limited opportunities that he can be trusted, to move the chains, to make the catch. I mean, if you look at AJ Green, granted much more target opportunities, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, you're looking at a disparity of 164 targets to 97 catches, 178 targets to 98 catches. The catch percentage ranges from 52.4% to 66% for AJ Green, when it's, basically 70 to 75% for Alex Erickson. Alex Erickson's not the same player by any means. The point being, if you use him correctly, use him in a specific role, likely in a chain mover type of role, carve up the middle of the field here and there, you're probably, and again, we've said this on this podcast many times, Andy Dalton likes the short and intermediate routes. It can be an area where this offense thrives. And, you know, he could be the number 4 receiver on this team. You know, you when they go 4 wides, that very well could be the case, especially if what Lombardi and Evan Silva are saying is true, that the Bengals really value the guy, especially as potentially an offensive player. And this isn't just a Marvin Lewis thing. Apparently this was this offseason too, that teams have been inquiring about him. So very interesting in terms of holdovers, guys that maybe were in the previous regime's doghouse, injuries, all that kind of stuff. The team and this new regime is showing a lot of faith in a lot of different players in the wide receiver group. And I overall, you got to think that that maybe bodes well for things going forward, right, John?
Yeah, because, you know, if you bestow that faith in one position group, then everyone else in the locker room, that faith kind of bounces off and reciprocates into other scenarios as well. And again, this is Taylor's team, and the guys that he decided to keep and re-sign or whatever the case may be, like they're buying in, and as well they should be, because, you know, he's shown that faith to them. And I think it, you know, all the veterans in this roster now, all the rookies now, they're under one goal, I guess, and they're under one direction. And as long as he keeps that same path and keeps that same mind, and evolves in the right way, and then I think it should be no problem in terms of establishing a culture and establishing a way of doing things in that sense.
Yeah, William Costin in the live YouTube chat says Erickson is the truth. Bengals better not trade that man. And this one from James Napke is this is just on point, man. Guarantee it was Belichick that was asking about the trade. Erickson fits perfectly in the Patriots system. That is crazy accurate. Now that hasn't officially come out, but I would not be surprised to hear that. And you know, going back to AJ Green's comments about the Lewis regime and Marvin Lewis favoring the defense, you have to wonder about the overall impact on Andy Dalton and what that means going forward. You know, showing up the defense and practice, all that kind of stuff. We'll see if that plays any kind of positive factor for Andy Dalton in these practices, the way he's taught, all that kind of stuff. We'll see. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. We've been talking about the Bengals wide receivers, a lot of news there. And a lot of moving and shaking in terms of what these comments mean. Not a lot of moving and shaking in terms of roster acquisitions or high-profile acquisitions this offseason, but there's still a lot of time in the summer. Final cuts, they may add a guy here and there. We're going to talk a little bit in just a second about what the depth chart and roster could look like a few months down the road. We'll get to that in just a second. You can also leave us a question. We're going to get to listener questions at the end of the show. You can leave us a question in the live YouTube chat, in the comment section at cincyjungle.com. We'll be taking calls later in the show at 949-542-6241, or you can text us right now. Right now we'll be taking those. And we'll try and get to your call or text at the end of the program. You can also get this show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Google Play. You can get it on cincyjungle.com. You can get it on the Megaphone platform. And, of course, all of our stuff is on YouTube. So subscribe to those channels. Get the show how you can. Get the feeds. Get the show pumping in those podcast outlets how you can. Join us live when you can too. We'd love to have you join us and submit questions to potentially be on the air.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Man, we have 4 long months to go until the regular season starts. And I was thinking about how we could pass the time, and I guess it's never too early to predict the 53-man roster, even though there's 90-plus players on it at the moment. So I ran through how I think the roster should look, and you can find that post on cincyjungle.com titled under Playing Duke Tobin. I think it's silly to predict what the roster is going to look like at the moment because we know literally jack squat, and there's not a lot of information to go off of. So right now it's mainly just about how kind of you would kind of build it. But I think there are some legitimate questions in terms of where there's going to be a lot of competition in training camp and preseason. And I think last offseason and last preseason provided a potential precedent for similar situations to come. And when I was building that projection, I thought back to something that you said on last week's program, and it was, maybe the starters and the starting talent of the Bengals hasn't drastically improved so much, but the depth behind those starters and the depth overall, in case there are, an abundance of injuries in the regular season, the depth is better, and they may be better equipped to handle said injuries at key positions. And when going through the roster and how it could potentially look, there is more positions I would feel confident about in terms of their depth than I would last year. So looking at who is likely to make the roster going in September, where are the positions that you would see not only major competition, the most competition in terms of the roster, but also where would we find a similar situation to that of what we saw from last year in terms of Jesse Bates taking over for George Aloka and the Bengals also cutting George Aloka? Where could we find something like that? Because the Bengals have a lot of cap space now, but we always got to assume that they don't have as much cap space as they like because they're the Bengals. And we could see a potential veteran cap casualty. So where on this roster would we be able to find something like that down the line?
Well, so you're asking the highest level of competition within specific position groups. Is that? Yes. So, I mean, there are so many. Ironically, some are because the Bengals absolutely overhauled those position groups. Others, like the one we just mentioned, they didn't really do anything in the offseason. And I think there's a lot of competition there. So, I think just because of this regime and really, I mean, both sides of the ball were not very good last year, but because of the injuries, because of the ineffectiveness of the offense and an offensive-minded head coach coming in, I think that the spotlight's a little bit more on the offense. They also, to the chagrin of you, John, they didn't really add a true edge rusher. They added Kerry Wynn, who's kind of a versatile piece up front, not really a true big threat. They also added Rennell Wren, who's a defensive tackle, but not like the edge, hand in the dirt type of guy. So, I don't know if there's as much competition there. I'll say this. Three or four groups, I guess, that I would look at. Offensive guard has got to be up there. You bring in John Miller, you bring in Michael Jordan, you re-sign Alex Redmond. These are all moves that you re-sign Trey Hopkins. These are all moves that really crowd that position group. You have Clint Bowling, you have Christian Westerman still on the roster. So that's going to be very interesting. Wide receiver and not beyond. I mean, I think if we're going to take this trade rumor that we just discussed about Alex Erickson, I think if we're going to take that as scripture, I think the first four spots are safe in terms of AJ Green, John Ross, Tyler Boyd, Alex Erickson. But behind them, Auden Tate, Josh Malone, Cody Core, can Stanley Morgan push one of them out of the door? I think those are going to be interesting battles to see. The other thing that I wonder about, and I want to get your take on this, John. We did get some comments about this, but we'll get to that with the listener questions. But I almost wonder if they save a wide receiver roster spot by using Giovanni Bernard as a hybrid player. They bring in two different running backs who can also catch. that they obviously value. I don't know. I think to me, some of the maneuvering with the roster is going to be in maximizing roster spots with flexible players like a Giovanni Bernard, like a Drew Sample, guys that can do multiple things. Maybe Drew Sample is their third tight end and H-back, and then you don't need four tight ends, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you have faith that Eifert's going to be healthy and ready to contribute right away. You know, so to me, I look at the flexibility of players and how that potentially could impact certain position groups, the versatility of some of these guys, especially on the offensive line. But I want to get your thoughts on that. But I say guard, wide receiver, tight end, I think is going to be very interesting. And then, you know, I guess if we got to go defense, I guess I'd say defensive tackle is an area to look at as well.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with those sentiments. And talking about,
I mean, gosh, why don't I just pick every position?
No, but like when I look at the tight ends, like there's, because with me, I don't trust Eifert to stay healthy at all. Like at this point, you just have to assume he's going to get hurt and he's going to miss at least significant time, whether that be half the season or all the season. It's just the expectation at this point. And it's unfortunate, but it's pretty much the reality. So when looking at the group, you're thinking they should probably keep four for the sake of Eifert getting injured, because you just can't rely on him. But there's also the fact that, you know, you, and this is somebody that somebody mentioned to me in the comments of the article, is that why not just, or on Twitter, why not just list, you know, Eifert as a receiver? If you're not going to use him in so much as a traditional Y inline blocking tight end, why not just list him as a receiver? Because you're mainly asking him to just run routes and just be a big slot receiver. So there's that potential avenue that they could do. They only keep six, but technically keep, or they only keep five and technically have Eifert as that sixth receiver. That's a possibility. That is possible to do with Bernard, because I do think they plan on having four running backs, because they drafted two, and last year we saw them only keep three, so there's that possibility as well. But yeah, just looking at the competition, I think it's got to be in the trenches as well. Like we're gonna have to address the Clint Bowling question sooner or later, because like even if he's on the team this year, it's almost improbable to think that he's going to be on the team long term with the addition of Mike Jordan and with Christian Westerman still here. There's a possibility that they can work something out there, but yeah, like I honestly, like when looking at it and putting it together, like it makes a lot of sense for them to just handle the Bowling situation like they did with Iloka last year, where they either have Jordan or Westerman kind of groomed for that spot and kind of share reps with him early on training camp, early on in the preseason, and then either just bench Bowling and start one of those two to get some continuity going forward into the future of that line, or just cut ties with Bowling and give him time to find a job somewhere else like they did with Iloka, or just trade Bowling to a contender, because, you know, there's obviously respect for him and what he's done over the past 9 years and the fact that he's been by far their best offensive lineman in the last 2 years. But now with the addition of Williams, you can almost give that distinction to him. Hopefully with Cordy Glenn being healthy, he's going to be a competent guy. So you're more comfortable about the state of the offensive line for where it is now than where it has been in the past 2 years. So that's definitely just a conversation that should probably be brought up sooner than later. And with the defensive tackle position, I have a soft spot for their last year's fifth round pick in A.J. Brown. I thought he was one of their best picks from that draft class. And I think if given the chance, he can make waves and push potentially either Ryan Glasgow off the roster, or just insert himself as like a 10th defensive lineman there, because I think there's probably going to be five edge rushers. I don't think they invested enough to push Kerry Wynn off the roster a la like Chris Baker did last year. So like, right. Yeah, like they signed him for 1 year, but he's not a guaranteed lock to make the roster, but they have nothing else at that position to warrant pushing Wynn off. So I think he's safe. And then if they only keep four defense tackles, then it's probably Brown on the outside looking in. But I think if you give him a legitimate chance in the rotation in the preseason, he can make some noise and just be good enough to just say, we can't say no to this guy and just have to keep 10 defensive linemen. And when you look at the rest of the defense, you're probably thinking, we can't keep 10 defensive backs, we keep 10 defensive linemen. So it's going to create a lot of conversation with that. And I guess finally, the defensive back room, because I think it's probably from the corners, backs, and the safeties in that aggregate group, it's probably one of their strongest, if not their strongest, because there's just not a lot of weak links there when everybody's healthy. The investment of Jordan Brown, I think, is exciting, and it'll create some competition with him and last year's fifth round picks and Devontae Harris and Darius Phillips. And the safety room, because last year, had he not gotten hurt, Trayvon Henderson would have been a name that we would have had to remember. He was an undrafted guy from Hawaii last year, and he may have pushed Brandon Wilson off the roster because he made his that final cuts, and unfortunately got injured in the last preseason game. So if he returns to form, he can make a case for himself, and you know, maybe they even end up keeping five safeties and five cornerbacks. So probably interior offensive line, like you said, defense tackle, like you said, but I think there's going to be some legit competition in the secondary because of how talented and deep and young that group is. And under the same defensive back coach last year, Durante Jones, who I think did a very good job with what he had last year, I think there's going to be some definitely some young talent trying to make its way onto the roster.
Yeah, you have to wonder, with the Bengals waiting until the third and the sixth round to get linebackers, you have to wonder, and those are replacements basically. Jermaine Pratt is probably the Vontaze Burfict replacement in the lineup. Not saying he will be that player or won't be that player, but that's the replacement there. And then you look at Deshaun Davis. He is probably a guy that may push Hardy Nickerson or someone like out of the door. but my thing is, you know, that's not really adding to that group to knock a lot of people out of the door. So I'm almost inclined to go with you in terms of the defensive back thing, where maybe they go a little heavier, and that's kind of the way of the league to guard the pass. And if you have maybe you move a Sean Williams up in the box a little bit more and you play Jesse Bates and another safety back there. Maybe you keep Webb and Denard and Jackson and Kirkpatrick on the field at the same time more frequently and less linebackers. And that's the thing. And so they go a little heavier at defensive back. I could definitely see that happening. This kid that they drafted in the seventh round, they seem to like too, and he seemed to have good value. So, I wouldn't be surprised if they went a little heavy at that spot. To your comment about Kerry Wynn, I think that's a guy, while not a great acquisition, he is a guy that can do things from multiple spots on the defensive line, and that is a guy where you keep him, aside from being a Lou Anarumo guy, he is a guy that maximizes those roster spots, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he could kick inside, he could play on the edge, he could do a couple of different things, and I think that's – they like keeping those kind of guys, and I think that is something that is to note when it comes time to the Bengals chiseling down the roster. To respond to what you're saying about Clint Bowling, I don't see them getting rid of him. I could be wrong. I think his cap hit's close to $6 million. It's $5.75 million. It's the most, the highest cap hit he has had in this current contract that he signed, the 5-year, $26 million deal. I'll say this: he's in his last year of his deal. So I think some of these guys that they've brought in, I don't know that Alex Redmond makes it. I don't know that they're relying on Michael Jordan to start right away or to be an immediate impact player. You know, maybe he needs another year of development. He had another year of eligibility that he decided to forego in college. So maybe it's groom for a year and, you know, let Bowling play out the final year of his contract, have him be the anchor of this offensive line with all of these young guys on the line. And that's how it goes, and he will be gone after 2019. That's kind of more where I see it going. They're not in cap hell or anything right now. And for you, basically, who is currently your best player on the offensive line, Jonah Williams can prove that wrong. Cordy Glenn could have a bounce back year, I know. But for a guy who is basically known at this moment in time as your best offensive lineman, $5.75 million cap hit is not very much. Last year, the deal, I see him sticking around for this year. That's just me. I do think he is a target though. And I think that's where I'd like to go next are some of the possible surprise cuts. To me, he's one. People have said it earlier in the off season. They're not talking about it as much. Maybe Dre Kirkpatrick is out there given his salary, some of the things we have or have not seen on film from him. That's a guy that's not being talked about a lot. I personally would like to see them keep him with that stable of defensive backs they've built up. But You know, that's another guy I don't think people have talked about very much in terms of a possible cap casualty or a cut. I don't know. But those are some guys that I could see could be surprised. Another guy, I hate to say it, I love the guy. I love it when he's healthy. But Tyler Eifert, if he ends up being a guy that just isn't healthy, isn't ready, maybe he's just not around this year. And, you know, injury settlement, IR, I don't know. It seems to me that he's going to be targeting training camp and be healthy, but we've heard that song and dance before too. I hope he's healthy. This team is better with him.
Yeah. And just one more thing about the bowling thing. My whole thing, like I'm with you. I would bet that he makes the team and that the plan is to have Jordan take over for him in 2020. That's probably, if I were to put my money on it, that's where I would. My whole thing with it is that I believe that Westerman is talented enough to do the same things, if not more, that Bowling can do right now. And the sample size is obviously small, but in that small sample size has been nothing but positives. And just thinking about it from a big picture standpoint, I would obviously much rather have Westerman in 2020 to say like 2023 than I would with Bowling, because I think unfortunately for him, age is going to catch up to him. He's never been the most athletic guy in the first place, so that's going to drop off as well. So yeah, as much as I hate to say, he's pretty much a depreciating asset at this point. And just thinking about the betterment of the offensive line in terms of long-term, it would be best to have Westerman start immediately. And unfortunately, with Bowling's cap hit, it would be hard-pressed to keep him on the bench. Now, obviously, if you remove Bowling, that's removing a good offensive lineman. It's removing good depth. And in a sense, it would make your offensive line worse for the time being. It's more of a thinking about the big picture, the long-term.
Yeah, it's a long play.
And another thing with, like, if you keep Westerman on the bench in 2019, there's just a 0% chance that you can convince him to come back on a multi-year extension for 2020, because you're basically creating another Evan Mathis. And I think he's too good that they should do whatever they can to kind of avoid that. But at the same time, again, I love Clint Bowling. I love watching him because I watch offensive linemen a lot, and he's been the only saving grace of the offensive line. But I think it's in decent hands now where they can afford to potentially do something like this. And I think it's one, a move like this should probably be expected, because we always try to predict the logical way of what the roster is going to look like. And there's always a couple of moves that we just don't expect. And I think this is something that at least needs to be remembered going forward.
Yeah. And for years, this team never valued guards until they drafted Kevin Zeitler, but they played Nate Livings over Evan Mathis. They did get Bobby Williams as a free agent who ended up being a very good football player for them. But I mean, for years, forever, they never valued guards. And now all of a sudden this offseason has been the offseason of guards. They've got guys that have started all kinds of games. Yeah, we know the deal with Alex Redmond, but he's got starting experience. Trey Hopkins has starting experience in the NFL at guard. John Miller has starting experience at guard. Christian Westerman has starting experience at guard. Clint Bowling has starting experience at guard. And then you bring in Michael Jordan. You're like flush with guards all of a sudden. Right. Just not used to it. This team just has not prioritized that position very much, especially as evidenced by letting Zeitler walk a couple of years ago. So pretty interesting. And for those of you who have not read John's piece on the early roster prediction, the early 53-man roster projection, it is on cincyjungle.com. I think most of it, I think we can all agree with. There are, again, these handful of players, Kirkpatrick, Bowling. What do you do on the defensive line? What do you do at defensive tackle? And how do you maximize, you know, certain players' versatility on this roster to maximize certain spots and everything. And I think that it creates a very interesting conversation at certain spots. One bold prediction about the roster before we move on to listener questions, John. One bold prediction from you about the roster as we sit here now in May and we look to the summer. And I'm sure we'll look back and laugh at both of ours here, but we'll see.
For the sake of not saying Bowling's going to get cut, I'll go with 8 offensive linemen and 10 defensive linemen. There's usually been a 9-9 balance, and unfortunately, there's just I look at what they have now, and they can't roster more than 3 tackles. Like all they have behind the 3 they have right now is Ken Perkins, and I don't know how you would roster Ken Perkins over literally anybody else who could provide you some value. So I'm going to say 8. Offensive linemen, 10 defensive linemen, and probably a 24-26 offensive defensive split.
Okay. I'll say that one of their big outside free agent acquisitions, whether it's Miller or Wynn or BW Webb, someone will not make the final roster. That seems that has happened before, whether it's on the rental deal or what have you, it's happened before. I would like to see new faces and guys that are younger and potentially can contribute in an Rumo system or Taylor system, whatever the case may be. But, you know, I think that sometimes the Bengals end up signing these guys and they don't always make the team. And I think that one of their quote unquote big outside acquisitions will not make the team. We're going to get to listener questions in just a second here. I'm Anthony Cazenza. He's John Sheeran. And this is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. We've talked about the wide receiver group. We've talked about the early prediction of the 53-man roster for the Cincinnati Bengals as we sit here in May. Obviously, a lot to digest and a lot will change going forward. You can get this show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Google Play. You can also get it on the Megaphone platform, our YouTube channel, and everything is on cincyjungle.com. Please try and join us live if you can. We'd love to have you. We answer questions on the air, and if you're new to the program, join us. We'd love to hear from you, and leave us a rating, subscribe to the show, all that good stuff. We've seen quite a spike in listenership over really the past, I could go back a year plus, but since 2019, we've seen quite a spike in listenership, and that's something we value.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
We've got a call on the line here, John, to kick off listener questions. We're going to get to this in just a second. And as I mentioned, for those of you who want to get in touch with us, 949-542-6241 is the number. Hi, who's this?
Hey, it's Terrell.
Terrell. Wouldn't be a show without you, my friend. I know you've been trying to call in, I think, a couple of times, along with some other people, but glad we got you in here this week. What's on your mind, my friend?
No problem, man. I was just saying y'all having an excellent show as usual.
Thanks, buddy.
I just feel like everybody letting their hair down since Marvin gone, man, as well.
Yeah.
I mean, not just AJ either. Jordan Evans. The offensive lineman, Carson, he ain't scared to let John Williams know the secret. So let's go. At the same time, though, I do feel that you know, somebody is on the chopping block, and like you said, might be the rental guys who came in, and I feel good vibes towards Zach Taylor. And another thing I was gonna say. There was so many mediocre teams made it to the playoffs last year. I mean, even the Colts, they came from the bottom to the top. And I feel like, hey, you never know what's going to happen this year. And I was relieved with that.
All right. Thanks, Terrell. Appreciate it. Good point by Terrell there in terms of, you know, we don't know. I saw I think I got a tweet this week from, I think it was Frank Valoria. Talking about, you know, the Bengals not getting respect from the ESPN. I think it was the power rankings. They're number 29. They're projected potentially to have six wins. And I think that's, kind of en vogue for the national media as it comes to the Cincinnati Bengals. But to Terrell's point, there may be some things that are happening behind the scenes in terms of overall morale, overall attitude, you know, a little bit of pep in the step, if you will, that comes with a new coach, a young coach that can affect this team in a big way. This is a roster that isn't, if you watch, John, the ESPN telecast of the NFL draft, Louis Riddick, whose opinion I respect a lot, he said it very succinctly and very well. This is not a team that has ever really recently been devoid of talent. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talent on this team. It's more about putting it together, proper coaching, being in the right headspace, being mentally strong, and beating those better teams on the big stages. And, you know, I think the hope is that Zach Taylor is providing that confidence based on his coaching style.
And that's completely fair. Like, just in regards to the quote unquote disrespect from the media, it's just looking at who else is in the division and comparing like the main important factors. You have the Steelers and Ravens, who have established head coaches who have made the playoffs several times. With the Steelers, you have still at the moment a good quarterback. With the Ravens and Browns, you have promising young quarterbacks who you expect to get better. And then with the Bengals, you have a first year head coach and a known average quarterback. So on the surface, the most important factor is quarterback and head coach. The Bengals have the least desirable, you know, duo on paper. It doesn't mean necessarily that they're the worst team. It's just that when you're making these, you know, presumptions and these projections in May, and you don't have a ton to go off of, and looking past, like, you know, the rest of the structure of the roster and whatnot, you can make a clear argument that the Bengals have the least promising in terms of overall potential in the most important spots. And until Dalton proves that he can be more than what he's shown in the past 8 years, and that Taylor proves that he can be a competent first-year head coach, that's just the way that it's going to be, because the Browns hype train is real, and odds are they probably won't reach the level of hype that they are. The Ravens are the defending champs, and the Steelers, until proven otherwise, are still contenders in the division. So that kind of leaves the Bengals in this purgatory where you're like, yeah, I guess if they're not third, then they're fourth, and that's just the way it is. And it's up to them to just kind of, you know, use that, maximize that to their advantage, and, you know, you kind of use this chip on the shoulder like the Browns have done in last year, and hopefully make it into a positive, because right now it's kind of a negative.
Yeah, and you know, we're trying to be optimistic on this program, and there is a lot to be optimistic about in terms of the roster talent, this draft class they just brought in. But you know, you are dealing with first time offensive coordinator at the NFL level, first time head coach, first time defensive coordinator, right? That's a big deal.
Yeah,
and you know, Anarumo's been around the league for a while. Callahan is, you know, his dad's been around the league forever. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean we've seen other people get promoted to coordinator positions, especially with the Bengals, who got a first time gig and just were in over their head. Ken Zampezi, I'm talking to you. So, we'll see. And there are a lot of question marks, and I think, you know, I think the depth is better this year for sure. Yeah. At a lot of spots. I think that's a key thing. We've talked about that a couple times over the past couple of episodes. I wanted to get to this one. It was a text that came our way, John, and it kind of plays off of a little bit of a comment I made in our roster projection talk. It was from Austin Tran, who's sent us some stuff in the past here. This is Austin Tran. Love the show. Oh, Austin, we gotta pat ourselves on the back. Thank you. We appreciate the love, my friend. Do you think, since the Bengals drafted two running backs, one of them can replace Giovanni Bernard until his contract is up to 2020? Well, I think there's a couple of different ways to take that question. Basically, are these guys that they brought in, Rodney Anderson and Travion Williams, are these the guys that are going to replace Bernard right away? I think in your roster projection, you had all keeping the all four, mm-hmm. Mixon, Bernard and those two, which I see as well. But my thing is, what if they go, and also I saw James Napke mention something in the live YouTube chat. Tyler Eifert is more of a wide receiver. Mm. Giovanni Bernard, potentially a receiving type of weapon. And then you get these guys, the young kids behind Mixon, more involved as running backs as well. Is that something you see as a plan? Or were those picks writing on the wall for Bernard, who's been a very valuable and just kind of an unheralded guy on this team?
Yeah, I think Bernard is safe for now, but there's like, he's got to be gone in 2020. Like,
when it heals up, I think, right?
Yeah, like rarely would you pay running backs on second contracts. And Bernard was a semi-exception because he was relatively cheap compared to what the market is now. Like, and that's going to be a conversation in a year or two when Mixon's going to be up for an extension. But yeah, like they're both Williams and Anderson are running backs who should prove to be more valuable than just six round picks. I think they could have both been drafted a lot higher had Williams been a little bit bigger, more athletic, and obviously Anderson not injured and suffered three injuries in college. But I think the plan for right now would be Williams to back up what Bernard does, and that's be that third down back and also be competent in pass protection, and Anderson be the backup to Mixon in case either of those two starters miss time. They have two running backs whose skill set reflect exactly what their starters do best. But the only thing that would tell me that Bernard's keeping the spot is that he's their best pass protector as a running back. Yeah, that's very important for what this offense plans to do. And coming out of college, Williams is a very good pass protector in himself. He might even been the best pass protecting back. It's just that whole thing of, do you really trust a rookie to be your best pass protector as a running back? I don't think that's necessarily what you want in terms of preference. So I think Bernard is safe just because of that. That's a very valuable skill set that he has, and also because he's a very good runner and a good receiver out of the backfield. I think he's safe for 2019, but I think the plan would be to have Mixon, Anderson, and Williams as your three running backs going into 2020, with maybe another investment who's not Bernard via the draft. So I think he's safe for now, but 2020 is probably gone.
Yeah, and Bernard's kind of in the same boat as Bowling, right?
Right.
Last year, the deal, getting up there in age, still only a $4.5 million cap hit this year. Granted, as a number two running back, you'd like to see that a little lower, I think, but it's still not a lot of money, especially for not a team that's not cap strapped. So I think what he brings, like you said, the pass protecting thing, I've talked about that for a while. That is a totally unheralded facet of his game that goes overlooked all the time. Can catch the ball almost as well as any of the wide receivers on the team. And you know, obviously a good running back as well. So, you know, I think in terms of a team guy and a talented team guy, he's what you want. He is getting up there in age, especially for that position. He's battled some injuries in the past. So I think for now you go Mixon, you keep Bernard. We also don't know exactly if this is going to be a red shirt type of season for Anderson based on some of the injuries you mentioned. So go ahead.
He is the one guy, because there's always one guy who gets injured in training camp and then all of a sudden is on the PUP and he's really not injured. I could definitely see him starting on the PUP or even going to IR because he's not completely healthy and just stashing him to keep someone else. That would be my guess for the guy this year.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that would very much fall into the Rodney Anderson kind of situation there. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Cazenza. We've been taking some listener questions, and we're going to get out of here in just a minute. Before we do, John, we put up a Twitter question, and you had a strange reaction to that. I don't know if that meant you were positive or negative about the question, or you were interested to find out what the poll results were. I think the poll is still up. If not, it closed very recently. But seeing as how it's been basically timelines on Twitter have been all Game of Thrones and all Avengers, we decided to do an Avengers type poll there is still a little time left. We've got, you know, quite a few votes on it. Basically, who had the bigger and or better Marvel Universe legacy? And I'm not spoiling anything, but just in terms of characters, amount of movies they were in, how they developed the character, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man or Hugh Jackman as the Wolverine?
Come on. Spoiler alert. Hugh Jackman dies as Wolverine. All right. But
yeah. that's been known for a little while. Though,
no, I remember responding to that. I said, oh, Lordy, because yes. It's so damn 50-50. And I think there's a lot of recency bias with obviously yep. Iron Man because Endgame just came out. But God, man, like I always think like Iron Man was like the soul of the Avengers, and while Captain America was like the heart, and they're both like leaders, but they both like are leaders in different ways. And the same thing goes with X-Men, because like Professor X is like the heart of that, but like or maybe not the soul, or maybe not the heart, but it, like Wolverine is also like a quote unquote leader with that, but it's just in a different way. So they both had like similar roles with them, and they're always like the emotions of those movies were always felt mainly through them. And the thing with Wolverine is that Hugh Jackman was able to perform, evoking more emotion as Wolverine than I think Robert Downey Jr. was Iron Man up until the very end, because for the most part, Iron Man was always just this quippy character. We didn't really get to see the levels of his character up until Infinity War and Endgame. And I think the ending of that really encapsulated the growth of his character. Whereas like there was never, in my opinion, a bad like performance as Wolverine was for Hugh Jackman, even though he was in a couple of bad movies, looking at you, Last Stand, and obviously Iron Man was involved in some below average movies as well with the Avengers. But it's so damn close to me, I can't definitively say one or the other. But like the way that I think Logan was so perfect for Hugh Jackman's ending as Wolverine that I would almost kind of give it right to him, because again, they're two leaders. They're two of the same leaders, even though they're not the de facto like leader of that group, I guess. But just the way that Jackman was so perfectly Wolverine, and I can't see either of the characters having a new actor anytime soon that would even come close to doing the same. And it's no knock on Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man, because he was perfect as well. But just like, I just remember walking out of the theater, just like remembering Wolverine's legacy and Hugh Jackman's legacy as that character. It was just, it was so perfect for me. And I felt the same way about Iron Man, but just, I remember feeling that and going against recency bias, I would just barely give the edge to Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like, it depends on what day of the week. Right. I mean, it's just right. kind of like, I mean, I, you know, when we put that up there, I was like, oh, Iron Man. And I was like, well, wait a minute, because, and I think that, you look at it, and Wolverine, unfortunately, and Hugh Jackman didn't have as many strong movies. You know, some people didn't really like Last Stand. Some people didn't like the other standalone.
Oh, the Origin movie was awful.
Yeah, the Origin movie. The other one was okay, where he went to Japan. That one was decent. But, you know, overall, I think both of those guys – you have to give them credit. And I think that they knew that they were so perfectly cast. They loved the characters themselves. That's why they were in so many different movies, even in small, small cameos. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were, Iron Man was in, and Robert Downey Jr. was in the Spider-Man movies and all that kind of stuff. You know, Hugh Jackman as Wolverine was in the X-Men, the newer X-Men movies that take place further back in time, and he's been around in those movies. So I mean, they've been in a ton of movies. They both did an excellent job. It would be hard to envision any other actor you know, playing those characters. And I think that what gravitated viewers to them, aside from, I mean, those two just in general were two of my favorite comic book characters growing up, but mm-hmm. I think what gravitated people to them is kind of their rebellious type of nature, but deep down, you know, they've got a good side, and they kind of redeem themselves often on that front. And I think that's what kind of makes the characters interesting and draws a lot of people to them. But both actors did outstanding jobs throughout their movies that they've played those respective characters in. And if you haven't seen Avengers, it's good. It's long. it's good. For me, it's not exactly how I pictured that movie, but it was still very good. Probably need to see it again at some point, but carving out 3 hours, 3.5 hours for a movie is rare these days. But anyway, that was our question of the week. And if you want, go on Twitter at BengalsOBI and vote. Right now it's 76% in favor of Robert Downey and 24% in favor of Hugh Jackman. So a little lopsided there, but what are you going to do? Again, this is the Orange and Black Insider. You can get this program on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Google Play. You can get it on the Megaphone platform, YouTube, CincyJungle.com. And, I think those are all the platforms. I don't think I missed any, but you can get them on a lot of different areas is my point. Subscribe to us. Let us know what you think. And we appreciate all the support. John, any final thoughts before we get out of here and shed tears for just Wolverine?
Yeah, I'm probably gonna go to bed and probably change my argument because it's so freaking close. I feel like if Wolverine was in the MCU, he would have been even better utilized than what he is now. And that's honestly something that's impacted my decision more. But I can't end this without saying that Iron Man was amazing too, and I don't want to not give him credit that he deserves. And Robert Downey Jr. Like, aren't they both? They were both Broadway guys, right? Because Downey, they're both like. Like, just Jackman and Downey Jr., they're not like your traditional action heroes. They're not like Tom Cruise or anything, because like you can put both of them in any role and they would just completely thrive. And I think that's honestly another testament to how amazing they were and how they adapted to that. So now I'm going to think about this all night. So thanks.
Yeah. Well, no, you're welcome. there's not a wrong answer. I mean, there's really not a wrong answer. It's just, That's how it is. Anyway, thanks for joining me tonight. As always, John, thanks for all of our live listeners and to those who submitted questions. Sorry we couldn't get to as many and some of the calls that have come in, but we appreciate it. Keep trying us, and we'll try and get your questions on the air in future episodes. I did mention a couple of episodes ago that we've been working on getting Willie Anderson on the show, former Bengals offensive tackle. He has committed to being on the show. It's just a matter of nailing down time. So we will definitely keep you updated as to when he will be coming on the program. It should be soon. And that should be an entertaining listen, because we're going to ask him about some of these offensive linemen the Bengals got in the draft and a lot of other things. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.